everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey, my friends, some fabulous news. The bar-tailed gotwit with a plump shorebird, right, has blown the record for non-step muscle-powered flight right out of the sky. And let me tell you about this bar-tailed gotwit. Anyway, the study is an amazing thing. It flew 7,000 miles nonstop. This is a bird that migrates every year. 7,000, 5 to 9 days without rest. Going from New Zealand to China. Right? 5 to 9 days without rest. How does it do it? How does a bird do it? Whatever we thought about birds in the past, whatever we thought about endurance, we blew it out the water. 7,242 miles without stopping. Oof. In the air. No food, no water, nothing. How do you do it? Well, that's pretty strong, right? So we're saying that genetically they must have endowed this bird with something that makes it endure to this level. I mean, like the salmon going upstream to spawn. You know, what makes them have that endurance and that so on and so forth? So we know a lot about physical endurance. And we know that for survival, there'd be a lot of endurance. We've learned that, you know. Animals will travel for mating. They'll do amazing things to just mate. Right, they'll give up everything, because that's their imperative. That's what they're supposed to do. So the question we have is the following. If our body has such ability to endure, do we have psychological endurance? Do we have psychological stamina? Do we have psychological persistence? And do we have psychological agility, flexibility? See, if the body is so capable of changing, moving, doing something different, is the mind that flexible? Well, in order to be a bird that's flying 7,000 miles for 9 days, what does it do with its mind? You think it's thinking about, oh, when I was a kid, I remember we used to play, I had a red wagon, you know, the bird, I was in a nest. Does it think about things? Does it ruminate? Does it dream about the girl over there in eastern China that you're going to see when you get there? You know, you're flying with about 10,000 other birds. Do you think about what's going to happen? You know, oh, when I get there, I'm going to have a sandwich. What do you think? What do you do with your mind? Well, we've learned from athletes that there are certain things that people do with their minds that make certain people capable of being more enduring as athletes. In fact, there have been psychological profiles of athletes that include the following information. Different between men and women. The men who, as athletes, are the most successful are have the following profile. They have a lower level of tension than usual. So you would imagine the ones who are the best, most excellent athletes are less tense than the ones who are, the ones who are more tense are not as good an athlete. They have lower levels of depression. Well, that makes sense. If you're depressed, how do you run a mile? How do you ski a slope? How do you do all that with this extra bit of gusto, you know? Depression kind of holds you down. They're not any different in their anger levels than the average person is. But they have higher vigor. They have more stamina. They have more willingness to persist. And they have less fatigue and confusion. Confusion is very important because when you're confused, it's very hard to have stamina. Now, this relates to the human mind. The human mind and the ability of the human mind to have stamina, to be able to persist, to be able to learn and be flexible and survive, a lot of it is based on the ability to sort things out. Confusion is one of those things that weaken the mind. And we've all been there. Haven't you ever been to a time when you're just confused, you don't know what to do, and you can feel yourself losing energy? You can feel yourself like, you know, getting depressed because you're confused. Do I love him? Do I don't? I love him. Does she love me? Doesn't she love me? What'll I do? Should I call him? Should I not call him? Should I stay with my husband? Leave my husband? Confusion, mind running around all the time. It's very hard to be active and positive with that kind of mind. Female athletes, different than male athletes, by the way, psychological profile of female athletes, the ones who are the most successful are clearly achievement-oriented. Of course, that makes sense as an athlete, but more so than the men, they are independent. You know, the female athlete, if you've ever seen one, they don't need a relationship even. They have a sense of, I am only me. It is just up to me. They depend on no one, but they are generally more aggressive than most women. They're emotionally stable. They're not labile and fragile, right? They don't break very easily. And they're assertive. So listen, there are many out there who are saying, boy, if only I could meet a woman who is independent, aggressive, emotionally stable, and assertive. Well, go meet an athlete. That's what you're talking about. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this, athletes and stamina and who works and who doesn't work. But let's talk about the human mind now. Now, what makes a mind be psychologically agile, and what good is it? Let's think about, if your mind is not agile, if it has just one way of being, there's one way that people are where they have this sense of determinism. They have a belief in something, and they say, this is what causes what is. This is what is. It may be a religious belief. You know, I am led by my belief. You have a belief in what is and the way it should be, and you believe that life has a formula to it, and there's a predetermination to it in a way, and you give into it, and you just fit in. I just want to have children. I just want to get married. I just want to have a house. I want to follow a formulaic way of life, right? Now, that's one way of being. It is genetically determined that I am to be this way, and this is the way I am. That's one belief system. Another belief system is your mind is very flexible, very capable of change. And the person who believes that they are set in stone, they don't like change too much. They don't yield very well to change. I'll give you an example. I was in Minnesota. People in Minnesota are very consistent. They're very kind. They're very calm, or the people I met were. And they were just so across the board, kind of a Norwegian calmness to them. And it was hard to tell one who was speaking from the other because their voices were soft and easy and nice and pleasant. But then when they talk about coming to New York, they would say, oh, I've been to New York. Some of them talked about, I went to Albany, and they call that New York. And they say, oh, yeah, I went to Albany. No, I never got down to the city, but Albany was really interesting. You know, I mean, from where they were in Minnesota, it was very interesting. Because there's something about New York that when they do go to New York, they get shot full of information. Now, let's not say it's not just stimulation. When your mind believes that there's a certain amount of information in the world and you live on a certain amount of information, let's say you live on a farm, and the sun comes up in the morning and the cow moves, you know, and this is your life. And then you get up slowly and you do everything in a certain way. And there are only like, you know, 20 possible people to see in your entire day. That's one thing. Then you go to New York and there are 5 million people that you could see at any one street corner if you stand there. It's a big difference. Well, if you're used to being on the farm and seeing 20 people, what happens to your mind when you see 5 million people all at once? One of those wonderful YouTube exercises or videos that are available is seeing the subways in China. Right? What happens in the subways in China? If you're from Minnesota and you got into a subway in China, boy, you better have a flexible mind. You know, it's almost, you can't imagine it. You can't imagine it. So what do you do with your mind if your mind is not flexible enough? How do you get stuck in things? Well, let me tell you an example of an unflexible mind. Prejudice. All prejudice, all assumptions, all things that you make up about people, you know, oh, all right, well, you know, all Norwegian people from Minnesota are nice. That's prejudice. I'm sorry, not all the ones I ran into were nice. But when you start making up things about people, all men are pigs, you know, all women are greedy, all religion is terrible, when you make up something like that, your mind is frozen. And there's nothing wrong with that. It could be frozen in one place. You could live that way for the rest of your life. It's like a wall. You could build a brick wall with your mind, and it just gets solid, and you just stay that way for the rest of your life. Fine. And then you tell your kids, this is the way life is. Life is you grow up, and you go to school, and you get married, and you have babies, and you pass on your house to your kids, and you die. That's one formula. What's wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with that. That's an okay way to be. However, the flexible mind is very exciting. You see, nowadays, especially in our economy, it's very difficult to travel. You have to take a trip. I mean, if you have to take a trip to somewhere else, it's very expensive. You got to take the time out of your job. There are a lot of difficulties around traveling nowadays for vacation, for learning. You know, so the learning is very difficult, but if you use your mind properly, you can take a vacation every day inside your mind and learn things about yourself that are so exciting and open yourself to things that you couldn't possibly imagine you would have considered and find a wonderful way of stretching your brain. Stretching your brain, mental flexibility, very, very important. See, very often a mind has stamina, but it's not flexible. A mind is endurance, but it's not flexible. A mind is persistent, but it is not flexible. When we have a mind that is persistent, enduring, and does not have flexibility, we generally have mental disorder. Give you an example of that. Yeah, I know. Think about addictive behaviors, right? A person with addiction believes life should feel a certain way. I'm going to take a drug or a chemical to get life to stay the same way over and over again. I'm going to drink alcohol, and alcohol will make me feel the same way, calm and numb. I'm going to use sex to feel the same way. I'm going to regenerate my hormones. I'm going to feel a certain way. I'm going to use gambling to stay excited. That is not a flexible mind. Addiction is a non-flexible mind. A flexible mind says, hey, what would it be if I didn't take anything? What world would open to me? Let's look at another kind of mental disorder. Adjustment disorders. They call them adjustment disorders. Adjustment disorders are disorders where there's an inability to adjust to a new circumstance. You know, that's a major feature of it. Any adjustment disorder you find out has to do with adjusting to new circumstances, the inability to. So when you have an adjustment disorder that has to do with, you know, you can't, you have school phobia. Can't adjust to being in school. You can't adjust to, you know, these are different things. Even cognitive disorders where there's a limitation in cognitive functioning. depressive disorders, disorders where a depressive mood is a major feature. You know a depressive disorder? You stay the same. Depression is a cave. Depression is one of the ways that we stay and try to preserve what is, as opposed to anything new. You know, you're afraid of it when you're depressed. You don't want to get excited. You don't want new information. You don't want somebody jumping in and saying, hey, let's go to a party, you know? Stay the same. Keep everything consistent. Close the lights. Shut everything off, you know? I want to see what I always see. I'll watch the same TV shows I always watch. I don't want to see anything new. I don't want to hear anything new. I don't want to taste anything new. Depressive disorders are based on the inflexibility of the mind or the fear of the mind to open itself to flexibility. There are disruptive behavior disorders. The major thing about a disruptive behavior disorder is trying to maintain control over your environment by being disruptive or rebellious. And it's the same thing. I want to keep my world as it is. Don't change my world for me. Even eating disorders have the same kind of thing to it. I don't want to feel hunger. I don't want to explore what that is like. I want to keep everything under control because an eating disorder is like an addiction. You know, I'm going to have the chemistry to keep myself going. And all these other ones, mood disorders are another form of mental inflexibility. Your mind goes only one way or another. It's totally good or totally bad, but you don't have the flexibility to flow between the two. Psychotic disorders, we're really serious. We're disorders where psychotic symptoms are the major feature. You imagine things. You create fantasies. But it's again, it's controlling your environment through the creation in your mind. You see? Psychotic people don't like stimulation. Psychotic people don't like new things. They want everything to stay where it should be. You know, you've seen people with repetitive behavior disorders, you know, compulsive disorders where they repeat the same behavior over and over again. That's what they're saying. Counting, you know, I'm counting something, I'm thinking about a baseball game. It's like, I don't want anything new in my mind. Trauma disorders. Now, talk about trauma. People who go to war. You know, they prepare a soldier for war. They tell a soldier, you're going to go to war and you're going to kill some people. That's good because that makes you a good American. You're going to kill the enemy. See, and you're going to kill them and then they're going to shoot at you and you're going to duck. And then you're going to shoot at them and hopefully you're going to kill them and that's all good. And you're going to be a hero and we're going to send you with your brothers. And you get over there and you wind up in some kind of a village with that's been bombed and there are babies all around you who are, you know, in terrible shape. And nobody prepared you for this. Well, if you've got a mind of somebody who likes to keep everything in order, you can't take this. What do? You know, you see one of these soldiers who get over there in Iraq and they say, look, there are dying babies all around. I didn't think this is what the war was about. They say, right, they fit it into what they know. Yes, but they are the enemy. See that baby? That was an enemy too, or a potential enemy. They shove it into one mental set. The people who are not able to adjust to the new information that they receive, they leave and they have what's called post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder is the inability to adjust your mind to a new situation. So when you have the bombing of 9/11, when you had 9/11 and there were people with post-traumatic stress disorder and people who didn't have it. The people who had the post-traumatic stress disorders were people whose minds could not allow for the factor of what took place in their lives and the lives around them. And yet there are other people who were dead set in the middle of it who did not have post-traumatic stress disorder. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So how do you get your mind to be more flexible, huh, friends? And is more flexible being that you have a wider range? Is more flexible being that you, for example, you yell at somebody and you get angry and you express your anger over and over again? Is that more flexible? Or is more flexible looking at any habit that you might have, anything you might do that's habitual, and saying, I wonder what would happen if I didn't follow that habitual behavior this once. What if I opened my mind to something different? So let's say you get angry all the time. You have to be careful, because it's like a science. If you never get angry, and then you have to see what it's like to express anger. So that's mental flexibility. But if you always get angry and you're always blurting it out, and let's say you tend to get hysterical and angry, and you're going to take a chance here now. Now we're going to try something new. You're going to say to yourself, instead of reacting, I'm going to push down my reaction. Instead of just blurting out my anger, I'm going to push it down. Now, how do you do that? How do you do it? Let's say you're waiting for somebody and they're late. What do you do instead of getting angry? How do you deal with it? We have a word called suppression. S-U-P-P-R-E-S-S-I-O-N, suppression. There are three words I'm going to teach you now: suppression, repression, and depression. Interesting, huh? All depressions. So, suppression. Suppression is when you push down willingly a feeling, and you push it down, you suppress your emotions, and there's a willfulness to it. You're not afraid to express it, you push it down. See, suppression. Repression is when you push it down unconsciously and you shove it backwards. So, for example, if you get angry at someone and you repress it, you never even know you were angry. It's repressed anger, but you wind up stepping on their foot by accident because you repressed your anger, not just suppressed it. Depression is when you've repressed so much anger that you've gone numb on the inside. Suppression, repression, depression. Suppression is calming down, pushing down a feeling. Repression is unconsciously and compulsively pulling that feeling down. Depression is the consistent repression, constantly pushing it down till you could feel practically nothing. You go numb. This is Armand DeMille. What happens to you, my friends, is sometimes you want to be able to suppress things just to be a little different, don't you? I'm going to take your calls today, by the way, at 212-209-2900. I'm going to talk to you about your psychological stretch. Yes, stretch. What is how is an obsession a sign of psychological fixation, of psychological stamina, of psychological endurance? You know, some people's, I say the word craziness, but some people's bizarre behaviors are so consistent, they endure like that bird that flies 7,000 miles. Sometimes you're amazed at how a person could stay stuck on one idea over and over again. Oh, I feel terrible because I think I insulted him. No, you didn't insult him. He's only 3 months old. Right? No, I insulted him and I damaged him. This is a recent case I had, right? No matter what you do, it persists. It persists because it's like that thought is keeping the door closed to a gate to some other feeling, so it's solid and it's a rock and you can't get through it. When you know people who are irrationally obsessed about things, don't try to talk them out of it. They're protecting themselves. What happens is the information, the people who are not obsessed, the difference between people who are obsessed and people who are not obsessed is people who are not obsessed open their minds to new information. You meet somebody for the first time, instead of making them who you want them to be, you allow them to expose themselves to you a little at a time. Show me who you are. Show me. Maybe I'll like it. Maybe I won't. So sometimes something like psychological persistence is not a good thing, right? Psychological stamina may not be a good thing, but it's good if you have it, especially if you're going to be flexible. Psychological endurance is the ability to survive assaults to your will, you know. That's like if you could have endurance. Some of you who got through childhood, I am amazed you got through. There were some violations of you people as children that I have seen that you had some kind of endurance. You had some way of getting through it. The worse that your childhood was, the harder it was to endure. The more you had to endure, the less flexible your mind is. Because you had to build a wall, you know? So you don't have, you know, you ever wonder what's the difference between a happy person and a not happy person? It's the flexible mind. It's the mind that says, I must stay protected and stay the way I am, as opposed to the mind that says, bring me something new, I welcome it. It's a joy in my life. The more flexible mind, now the more flexible your mind is, it doesn't make you live any longer. It doesn't make you laugh more. It doesn't make you do very much, because people with inflexible minds, they have a good time. You know, we're going to go on the country picnic, and we're going to have the picnic, and we're all going to do the same thing, and we're going to all get together, and we're going to play, beanbag races, and we'll do the thing we always do. That inflexible mind, they could laugh, they could have fun. But the flexible mind makes every minute brand new and exciting, even if you're doing the same thing over and over again. And that's where I think we benefit. I think we benefit by being able to stretch our brain a little bit. And part of why you sometimes want to have a therapist around is because your mind gets stuck in one place. Even trying to think out of it, you can't. Even if you try to get out of it, even if you try to change your mind, you can't do it. Your brain won't let you because it gets stuck in one place. Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. So we're going to look at you today, and we're going to look at where you're stuck and where you might open your brain to something new, huh? And we'll try it out together by your calling in at 212-209-2900. One would think that if a mind is not flexible and it gets a whole bunch of new information, it would celebrate, you know, but some people don't like it. You know, problem with therapy too often. People go into therapy and they have a very stuck mind and they say, tell me all about me. If you tell them too much, they run away. They can't take it. They got to get a little at a time. They got to welcome it in. If you give a person too much newness all at once, the brain clamps down. It's got to be a little at a time. You got to be welcoming it in. Something happens, for example, with people if their parents die or if a parent dies. It's very hard. There are some people who have prolonged recovery from a parent's death. Do you know why? Because their minds are inflexible. Because they cannot adjust from being a person who's got a parent who's there to being a child who doesn't have that parent. That adjustment, I am alone versus I got a mommy or daddy. That adjustment, sometimes you can't handle it. So what do? You get depressed. You depress yourself until... You depress yourself until you could recover from it. You depress yourself until you could finally let in the awareness that that person is there. People with prolonged grieving usually are people who have rigid minds. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls after a little music. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. We are talking about flexibility of the human mind, its great advantage. I'll be back with you in just a couple of seconds.
In your mind, one foot on Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. Living at the bottom of the stairs of life, never a smile knocking on your door. The air is blue and so are you, prehistoric monsters on the floor. Last verse of your last song, God don't hear dead. The end of the line is in your mind, and you'll be staying in. In your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
Johnny Cash, In Your Mind. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I've been talking to you today about the flexible mind and how important it is to have a flexible mind, or maybe not important, but how enjoyable it is to have a flexible mind. You know, it's really fun to have a mind that just is like learning. You know, that's the beauty of children. You buy a child a gift, and the box could be as important as the gift itself. One wonders why somebody hasn't invented a gift of a box inside a box inside a box for children. You know, just make them interesting to open up and make them different colors. Who cares what's inside? Just play with the box. 212-209-2900. We're going to take in your calls. What happens with your mind when it gets stuck? Most of the people who ever come to see me, people who are looking for help psychologically, are there because they're stuck. I'm stuck in one place. I can't get out of it. I'm stuck in one place. I can't get out of it. Help me, help me. I can't get out of this one place. I'm stuck. You can certainly understand that. That's why most people seek out assistance. Because you can't do it yourself, you got to ask for help. If you can get a friend to help you or somebody else to help you, that's great. If not, sometimes you need somebody who's not invested. Let's take one of your telephone calls, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
How are you? It's good to hear you. I love your show. Thank you so much for everything. My name is Barbara. So I'm finding that I'm more inflexible about my brother's passing than I want to admit. Mm. And I often thought of myself as being quite a flexible person, so I'm obviously not, because it'll be 2 years in April, this next April, that my brother has passed, and I find myself, I have to say, I literally talk to him almost every day.
Okay, try this with me, okay?
Okay.
Let's take the word passed out of your vocabulary.
Okay.
Let's say he died.
All right.
Now, what just happened to you when I said that?
I'm okay with that, because sometimes I do say died. I didn't even realize I said passed.
Yeah. Most people who say passed are trying to deny the existence of the death.
Yeah. Sometimes it does feel a little unsettling for me, that because it sounds very final.
Yeah.
And
let's say it is final.
Yeah, and it is final.
Let's say it is now. Let's say if your brother's death is a finality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've always been very connected to him, huh?
Yes, I have. We've been psychically connected, actually.
And you two have survived your childhood together?
Well, actually, I'm 17, or was 17 mm-hmm. years older than he is, and I had already had a son. So there was a period of time when we weren't together often, but we were still psychically connected.
And knowing that you were connected to him saved you from what? Throughout your life, knowing that you, in the roughest of times, knowing that your brother was there, what did it do for you? Gave you a reason to live.
Right.
I mean, there were times when you felt like giving up, weren't there?
I don't know about giving up. There's a lot of issues around his death, around our relationship, you know, our friendship. We were friends. He was, you know, we were just really close. He was gay. We embraced him no matter what. I had fun with him.
You just went away from I embraced him to we embraced him.
Yes.
How did it become a we from I?
I'm thinking about my mom.
Okay, let's go back to I.
Okay.
I loved my brother. I needed my brother. I lived with my brother. My brother died. Right? Without my brother, my life has changed, because without my brother, I have almost nothing. What? Finish the sentence. Without my brother, I really don't have what?
I really don't have...
First thing that comes to your mind.
His laughter.
Mm-hmm. And therefore?
And therefore, sometimes I feel alone.
Yeah. Without my brother's existence, I feel alone. And I don't want to feel that aloneness. And that's what the issue is. You see, the flexibility of your mind is, your mind is saying to you, Barbara, you got to face this aloneness. You got to be willing to feel this aloneness. And you're saying, I don't want to feel this aloneness. I'll just keep my brother alive. I'll keep talking to him every day, and I won't have to deal with it. Which is cool. That's fine. That's what a lot of people do. But it would be very interesting for you, Barbara, to let him pass and see what would happen if you did say to yourself, I am alone, and let me see what the world has to offer to someone who is alone. That's going to take a little exercise on your part. It's going to take a conscious exercise. But we got to start with the fact that your brother is not passed. He died.
Right.
Let's start with that. And do you keep any clothes of his around your house?
Well, no, but I have some things that he owned that he basically gave to me before he died. A mirror, for example, that he even put up is still right where he left it.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of other items that he repaired for me. And so, yes, I have the energy.
So you think about him all the time.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
So you think about him all the time.
Yes, I do.
Okay, I've got it. I mean, you know, it's kind of an ordeal. It's a bunch of things. I could tell you a symbolic way to try to deal with yourself, but it's very hard to do. One thing I would do is cover the mirror with a black cloth.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I would cover it. It would remind you.
Okay.
You know, and then it would open your heart and let yourself cry as often as you could cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just let those tears come.
Okay.
And it'll free your mind.
Okay.
Thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you very much.
Barbara, thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, is that me?
Yes, that is you.
Oh, this is Monroe. Hi, Armand.
Hey, Monroe, how are you?
All right, I just had my internet fixed, and it was a long, long process with the Verizon. Enormous number of moves and fill this in and do that and so on and so forth. And just as I came back online, I had the went back to WBAI because I was doing all these things. You used the word obsessive.
Yep.
And I know that the word obsessive is usually applied to somebody who's got a certain focus, and yet I feel, judging by myself, that even though I'm so concerned about WBAI and fairness and honesty and transparency and everything like that and good government and so forth, it's a progressive and positive thing, and it's not some sort of a fixation that is rigid and doesn't take in new information and doesn't look for other solutions. In fact, I mentioned at a couple of the LSB meetings that we
hold on a second, Monroe. Hold on. This is not a format for doing that, but I will respond to what you say. Yes. Organizations frequently do that. And I don't know if that's what WBAI does, but I know organizations that frequently try to protect themselves from anything new by persistently only going with what they have. And businesses die that way. Businesses fade that way. Organizations fade that way. They try to protect what is instead of leaving room for what's new, instead of leaving some kind of room for productivity and growth. So I appreciate your insight into that. That certainly is true. That is something that does happen with organizations. The more you try to keep things steady, the more things die. Because, you know, the human organism is based on growth, on flexibility, on plasticity. Our cells are always growing. If our cells aren't growing, they're dying. They're never staying the same. There's no cell that just sits in the body and hangs out and says, oh, I'll just hang out. It's either growing or dying. And so we, with our minds, if we're staying where we are, we're slowly dying. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. This is your own buddy, Insarara.
Hello, Insarara.
Hi there. It seems like I when I call up, it's almost a commercial for you, but that wasn't my intention. That's the way it comes out.
Because you love me. Yes, you do.
I find that when you say things and I look at my life and I realize that it's working in my life, you know, that sort of it begins to connect to me and say, okay, yeah, you know, it seems like what I'm doing, I'm happy, and maybe this is a reason why I'm happy at the moment. Quickly, yesterday you were talking about, taking responsibility for things. And the first thing I thought about was the book, The Secret. I mean, it's just one book of many, many, but it says, you know, essentially that you are always responsible for what you do. And if you look at your life like that, to some degree, and say, look, everything that goes on, I am essentially responsible. You can add certain things, and I find my mind tends to be, you know, I'm ubiquitously curious about almost everything.
Yes, you are.
So, all right, yeah, I listen to BAI all the time, and my friends say, but how can you listen to that? I mean, it's all about all that stuff that's going on in the world. I said, yes. But I also can think of string theory while I'm listening to economics. I can also work with parallel universes, and I can think of those things. And then I'll give them this quote, which I like a lot. These are all, you know, connecting things, but they allow me to be flexible and to be happy. There's a quote from a guy named Viktor Frankl. I'm sure you've read
it. Oh, I know Viktor, yeah.
Okay, there you go. In search for meaning, he says, the greatest human freedom is that you can choose your attitude in any given set of circumstances. And whenever I ask people how they feel, and I say I'm feeling beyond fantastic, between fantastic and beyond perfect, they go, oh, that's really great, that's great. I say, well, why don't you say it? You know? And they go, well, and then when I leave them, I say, how do you feel? I feel great. I say, you got it, you got it. I said, you can always choose how you want to feel. And I find the more I do that, I guess my own positive intention, yeah, the better I feel, the better I, you know, kind of speak to other people. And if someone doesn't hear it, they go, well, I really don't want to hear this. I go, okay, well, that's still right. You know, they don't have to speak back. But I find that increasingly I kind of like the space I'm in, even though I can look at the world and say, yeah, I know the economy, and I know what's going on. And
well,
I know
let me ask you something, Ansarara. If you were to look at your mind, and you would say, you know the one place where I don't have an opening? The one place where I tend to be shielded, and I'm going to guarantee you this has to be around intimacy, because your mind is very, very flexible when it comes to your existential being.
Right.
Where's the one place that you consider yourself to get stuck?
Okay, here's the one I work on. The new thing happened to me. I just recently got married about 20 weeks ago. Okay, and the woman's a wonderful person. She's very intelligent, but of course she's a different entity. And I started off by saying, or we started off by saying, look, our goal is to make this marriage work. So therefore, whatever we do, whatever we have to do, we try to make it work. And one of the things that I work on is, you know, being open, intimate, whether it's difficult or not, with her. And the more I do that, I find she, thank goodness, she seems to want to do the same thing with me. Sure, there are plenty of things we say to one another, and at first we're, well, I don't know if I like that. To give you a real quick example.
Wait, you know, give me an example of where you get stuck.
Okay, a quick example.
No, I want to know where you get stuck.
Oh, okay.
Not
well,
where you're successful.
As I say, it's like what you said a long time ago. You look at where you get stuck, and then look at that as it's trying to tell you something. Remember the thing you talked about a long time ago? You talked about having people around you tell you that they love you and they really care about you and give you really, really, you know, positive emotions, and then wonder why you're feeling nervous about that. Mm-hmm. And you look at it and you stay. And I think you said you told your friends, look, keep saying it. Keep saying it. And then, of course, you reach a place where you kind of don't like to be. But the point is, I guess the point you were making, is that that's the point. That's the place where you need to go. And so that's what I kind of do. I try to go there. When I feel uncomfortable about speaking to somebody and they don't speak back to me, I go, aha, that's telling you something about yourself in Sarara. So let's look at this. Let's kind of deal with it. So I guess what I'm saying is that when I get stuck, I realize this is a good uphill bicycle ride.
Hey, listen,
it's got to go uphill for me to go downhill at a certain point.
And Sarah, Rob, would you be my poster boy?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bye. He's a really flexible guy. What a great mind. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls about your own flexible mind. You know, is your mind flexible? Hi, you're on the air.
This is Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Hi. I'm actually going to respond to the last two callers, especially the girl that the lady who had the brother passed away.
Yes.
And I actually find it very interesting when you talked about the interpretation, you know, and how interpretation actually influenced our emotions. I remember once a saying from one of the philosophers, I think he was Roman, Epictetus, and he said, you know, that we're actually not affected by events, but by the views that we have of them.
Uh-huh.
And there's some there's some truth to that. And I actually agree with the last caller that our interpretation actually, you know, reality actually does affect how we approach life.
Well, give me an example of how you use that to overcome one of the great difficulties of your life.
Well, I kind of feel for the
for yourself, not for don't make it big, make it personal.
I don't know.
What challenge have you had recently that you just felt like batting yourself over the head with your shoe because you couldn't get past your own thinking?
You know, Armand, this is usually the challenge that I usually have, the challenge of, you know, coping with death.
Yeah.
I don't know why I have a fascination with death. It's constantly on my mind. And it's not precisely about me, but I usually have a tendency when I think about death, is usually about my mom. And I usually think about, you know, what would I do if my mom is not around? What would I do if I cannot, like, be able to provide the things that I want to provide for my mom, you know, with all the sacrifices she's made for me? And, you know, in some ways, I don't know if it's being self-centered somehow. Like, I want to, like, be able to lift off.
You can't imagine a life without your mother. Right now, your mother is a central part of your life.
Yes.
You take care of her. You provide for her. She provides for you. The two of you are as connected as two humans can be.
Exactly.
And the thought of you being separated from her by some arch evil like death is just overwhelming. So it's not fear of death that you have. It's fear of being alone.
Exactly.
It's not the death. You'll think about the death itself. There is a thing called thanatophobia, which is fear of death. But that's not what you're about. You're about fear of being not just alone, but alone without mom. You have this connection that's like your identity. And when you don't have mom around, you're going to have to find a new identity. And it's very hard to do.
That's right.
Very, very hard to do. Your mind doesn't want to allow it. So.
Well, I would tell you one thing, though. One thing that definitely does help me. It's a combination of both spirituality and I guess how you would say science. I'm a great believer of, you know, Einstein's equation, you know, how energy and matter are interchangeable. And that, you know, all it does is transform from one state to another, but you actually never lose it. You know what I mean? So to me, that idea kind of brings comfort into my life, in the sense that I feel that, you know, that even though my mom at some point will be gone, like, I totally won't lose her, because I feel like everything is so interconnected, and that, you know, she just changed to a different form of some sort. And to me, you know, it brings kind of like some kind of mental peace in my mind, thinking like, you know, you don't totally lose everything. Everything is kind of like, you know, I don't know how you would say it, change, recycled, moving on to a different dimension or to a different energy form.
So what you've done is you've expanded your mind to include new information.
Exactly, and that's what I mean. But my interpretation of reality and how I look at, you know, before I used to be more like fatalistic or more like, you know, that's the end and that's it. You lose everything, period. But now there's a kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel where I feel, wait a minute, life doesn't have to look like that, you know. Why do I, you know, it's like I look at my mom and I say, maybe she may not be here in this physical state, but I feel that somehow some part of her, whether it through energy or whatever, she'll be near me.
I hear you, Robert. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you. And, you know, I want to, you know, all of you also who are worried about what happens if there's some kind of a crisis in the economy or if we lose anything, you know, try expanding your mind. Try seeing what would it be like if we all had nothing. See what that feels like. It would be kind of remarkable to let in all of those thoughts. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, listening to Thelonious Monk. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. You can hear today's program on thepositivemind.com.